Cool. Are we ready to go? Are we ready to do it?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes, we are. All right, I'm turning down the music. Hello, everybody. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Research VR podcast and coming at you live on a Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Pacific. We're doing this every week, everybody. If you don't know that by now, you should, because we've transformed from a podcast to a live video podcast, which is really fun. With me today, I don't know if my co-host, which was supposed to be over here in the ether, isn't showing up his avatar. But
his audio is there.
Oh God, he's coming as a voice of God from within.
Yes, I'm a ghost today. And before we join you.
To my left, actually, our special guest, Anton Hand, the developer behind hot dogs, horseshoes, and hand grenades. Can't forget about those. one of the earliest, I'd say, Vive and SteamVR games that was out there. One of the more updated things that's been on the store, and probably one of the best-selling things that's out there. And not only that, I'd also mention, it's probably some of the videos that we've seen about VR have been coming from H3, like just really cool gun tricks and reloads, and we'll get into those and show some examples in a bit. But hi, Anton, good to see you, man.
Good to see you, too.
Howdy, howdy. Peter is... his avatar's popping into the world.
Oh,
coming through. We'll see if he situates himself. Well, everybody, today is what's our date? Today is actually September 3rd. Wow, can you believe that? 9 months in already. We are on our 49th episode. Our 50th is coming, I guess, next week, which is really exciting. We did not know how long the Research VR podcast would go when we first started it, but here we are, transformed into avatars, speaking in VR. This is the final realization of what we wanted a podcast to be, is essentially to be able to interact like we would in real life. And we're getting there. It's really exciting. Anton, how are you surviving the heat? It's
I know. Central air and luck, I guess. I mean, there's a fire burning to the northwest of me on a mountain, which is a little nerve-wracking at the moment. I keep pulling open Twitter and being like, "Well, is Burbank burnt to the ground yet?" Because we're next if that happens.
Oh, dude, seriously. For those of you guys that don't know what's going on, anyone that's not really in California, which half of our audience actually is in Germany. Hello, our German friends. It's really cool. California has been having this crazy heat wave this weekend where I'm in San Francisco, and San Francisco gets, you know, it's cold usually, especially during the summer. It's around like 50 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, like 10 degrees Celsius. And it was so hot this summer, or this weekend, it got up to like 30, 40 Celsius or like 110 Fahrenheit, breaking records. And they say climate change doesn't exist. And
oh, yeah. It's been freaky here because you step outside at 11 p.m. and it feels as hot outside as a summer day at noon. Minus the sun. You're not accustomed to feeling that as sort of air at night. It's creepy.
And you're lucky. I mean, you're in LA. You guys are used to having AC in the houses. Like, that's not something that San Francisco people think about. Like, we don't have AC in the houses. We don't need AC for most of the year. I'd say maybe for a week or two. So anyway, enough about the weather, everybody. Let's talk about VR. we want to go through a few bits of news this week before we jump into H3. So first bit of news here, I'll make the big screen a little bit bigger, pull it in so y'all can see, Windows mixed VR. I like that Road to VR calls it the Windows VR headsets and not mixed reality headsets. Windows VR headsets and controller bundles launch this holiday. Look at them. There's a ton of new headsets coming out, $300 or $300 to $400 with 10 track controllers, Steam VR compatible. So many good, cool little features here and there. But yeah, that's really big news. It seems like the market for that you're going to be able to play, the user base of players on Steam VR is gonna grow, hopefully, at an exponential rate with when hardware cheaper hardware like this comes out. Anton, have you had a chance to develop on any of the Windows mixed reality headsets yet?
No, it's been one of those weird things that while I've heard about the platform for a while, I've talked, you know, everyone who went to Vision was getting, I believe it was a headset from Acer. I haven't been able to get a ton of specific information about what their Steam VR support exactly is.
Right. How does that even work?
I mean, I assume it's just going to be, you know, a driver shim into the API. But the questions that I have basically are, how do the hands behave when the controllers are outside of the headset's ability to track them, and they essentially fall back just to sensors? Because especially for H3, you're doing a lot of interactions off in front of you. It's the same reason why something like Leap Motion wasn't appropriate for H3, because your hands really only exist when they're in front of your head. And in the case of H3, we're pulling things off of our shoulders all the time. We're grabbing things down at our pockets, knowing that we're over them just by a haptic buzz and a sound, basically. Only time will tell.
I think, and I was actually surprised that there are going to be Steam VR compatible headsets that aren't Lighthouse tracked. I thought that had to be a requirement, you know, given that it's from Valve. Seems like it's not. It seems like if it's a 6 DOF control headset, it seems to be like a certain requirement for it to actually work, at least from Valve's side.
I mean, why would you, force only the Lighthouse things if it kind of still tracks you movement in the room? It's kind of, you know.
Let's take a look through the headsets, guys. Like these, I mean, some of them look dorky as hell. Like, look at this one. Like, what is that?
Come on, it looks like from the 90s.
Yeah, but then you look at this one, it's like, ooh, a little bit more alien-y, a little bit more nicer. Actually, my favorite one, let me look it up, the Lenovo VR headset. I think that's the one that looks like polygons. Oh, that's not it.
Which one? Oh no, that's an Asus one.
That's the Asus. Okay. Well, see, they all blend into the same thought here. All right, that's the Lenovo. Damn it. there it is. Let's take a look at this. And this actually is the most expensive one. Let's take a look. So check out the polygons. Sorry, I'm like totally leaning away from the camera so that people can see behind me. So for people in the podcast, this is kind of the front of the headset has the same two cameras that all these Microsoft mixed reality headsets do, but they have it has a nice polygonated material in the front. Kind of looks like polygon art. That's
really which one neat. Will you get? Which one would you buy?
Me? I would like the white one, the Dell one. I thought that was really neat. Oh. Let's look at that. This one. I mean, it looks like an alien, but
definitely. What do you guys think about the fact that those headsets run directly with Microsoft Windows, right? You don't need anything else. That's like an advantage.
It's an advantage and a disadvantage, because I mean, I've heard, and I don't know if this is 100% confirmed, but you have to not only be running Windows 10, but be up to date to a certain point in Windows 10 to run these, which is a bit of a non-starter for me, because I run 8.1 on my work machine. It's what I like to do, and I don't like arbitrarily changing my OS to suit a single piece of software platform.
Right. You're not about the Windows 10 life, are you?
No, not at all.
I mean, Windows 10 is more secure.
Yeah, but it's one of those. For me, the deal breaker is its ability to decide that it needs to restart for an update right now, regardless of what I'm doing, until they change.
Things they canceled it.
No, it still does it.
No, I totally feel you on that. I've had Windows updates come up at the worst time before going live. On multiple occasions, like either I'm on a trailer shoot and we're trying to shoot mixed reality footage and, let's give it 15 minutes because it needs to update. That part I really agree with. However, from what I've heard from other developers is that running Windows 10, there are certain features that they have in Windows 10 just that just don't work for in Windows 8 for VR in terms of like how well it runs, how well, I mean, but I guess having a Windows 8 machine that you're developing on helps you also test out what like the 10-20% of users that you might that might run across H3 VR and make
I think the percentage is still larger, and this is this is a tangent of a topic, but you know I've run into several issues with H3 in the past that are Windows 7 specific that actually affect a non-trivial percentage of users. And the whole software stack is no longer QA'd on Windows 7 at all.
Right.
And I've been told as much.
Right.
So I've been told to like tell your users to update to a modern operating system. And we forget that there is a sizable percentage of gamers that do not want to give up Windows 7, that they don't, that it isn't a benefit to them to do so. And I imagine it'll be that way in a while.
Yeah, but it's kind of very bad regarding security and other issues. Like, I mean, it's just an anecdote, but the girl recently who I live with gave me her laptop and said, oh, it ran out of space. It's so bad. I looked at it. It was Windows Vista. And apparently some jerk told her not to update because all Windowses are bad. Just keep your Vista going. And this OS, you know, just basically wrote all the locks on the hard disk. And it's terrible for people. People should be forced to switch to newer operation systems. I would argue for that. It's more secure, more features, you know.
It definitely is. However, this isn't the topic in hand, so we're going to keep moving.
No.
I'm going to mention exactly. It has a 4-meter cable, these Windows VR headsets. That's pretty nice. And a 1440 by 1440 display. So,
just standard.
It's higher the higher res than Vives and Rifts. However, they're LCDs and not OLEDs. So, yeah. Curious. Peter, can you move your screen from here? This is your tablet? No? Can you, spawn your tablet. There you go. All right. Moving on. Let's talk a little bit. Well, I guess I don't know if I want to go too deep into what apps are actually coming out on Windows Windows Mixed Reality. It looks like a lot for sure. And, but it's not. It's actually not that many things. Like we have, Big Screen, the app that we're in, is actually going to be on Windows Mixed Reality, which is cool.
Nice.
We can have people joining in, and hopefully for our listeners and viewers out there, once Big Screen, they have plans on expanding the player count in a room. Once that kind of expands, we are thinking of having audience members actually be inside of Big Screen as well. You know, sitting here and also seeing the discussion. So that could be something really fun.
I do hope they implement the ability for them to throw tomatoes at us, though. That seems like an absolutely critical feature. Minimum viable product right there. Tomatoes.
I like that. I'm going to...
I would kind of argue it's more donations, but...
that here, you can turn, Bitcoin coins into things and get
tomatoes
thrown.
You can throw at me. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
This isn't something that I really want to kind of run past you, Anton. Rift Summer Sale drives record gains, highest Steam market share yet. So people that have been, following games on Steam Spy, there's a few other ones, VRL FG, I think, is another one that's just for VR games. They've just been seeing big bumps with users coming through because of the Steam, because of the Rift sale at first about a month ago, and HTC, I think, about a week ago, maybe 1 or 2 weeks ago, dropped their prices down to, was it $100 or $200?
$200. So the price drop was $200,
yeah. $60. Market. Pretty good. I mean, There's been a lot of gains in users, and Anton, hopefully, can you add a little bit to this discussion in terms of that?
Oh, it's we've certainly felt it. I would say that it started even before the Summer of Rift like sales were announced. There was the inherent sort of end of school summer bump,
right?
And then that sort of jumped on top of that. And I've definitely seen a far greater influx of Rift users comparatively. But some of that also has to do with our increased support of the platform.
Sure.
So,
as in like launching on the Rift and supporting touch.
Oh, I mean just in terms of like having more specific behavior overrides in the game and better supporting front facing configurations.
Oh, got it. Okay, that makes sense.
The big thing.
So here, Road to VR has a picture from. I believe this is from Steam itself. You can see kind of
how it should be. Yeah.
Bumped. This is the little bump that we're talking about here. The Rift has been kind of steady, going. I'm trying not to block the video here. And then there's a nice sizable bump as well on. So and actually, I'd love to see the stats on like how many Rift users actually use SteamVR. Like I do, but I don't think that everyone does. Like it's not something that's apparent from day one that, oh, like Oculus works with Steam. Like, so yep. that's curious. And there's still a solid number of people on the Rift DK2, and I don't think anyone on the DK1 these days. It says 0%.
It's just a puking machine, so yeah.
3.8% DK2. That's not bad.
I can't believe it's still that high for the DK2. That blows me away. Well, then again, I've had it's people cheap. Ask me on whether, like, hey, I've got a DK2 and a Hydra. Will H3 work with it? I've got a DK2 and those Nolo controllers.
Yeah.
I actually got the Nolo. The Nolo is not bad. It's a very raw prototype, but
they don't transfer velocity information correctly into. They don't send it into SteamVR correctly. So if you're trying to throw,
interesting,
using them, it doesn't work. Mm. But otherwise, all the button mapping works just fine.
Yeah, I just got it, and I need to still hack around with it, but good to know.
That's interesting, yeah. Seems like, I mean, these controllers, Steams and Oculuses seem to be the best so far. And as a developer, I would say, I mean, concentrate on those two before you would even think about trying to support Hydra and whatnot. Like, that's
I mean, we had last episode this great video where the guys hacked with a Leap Motion and, you know, some kind of Hydra controllers, you know, a full Vive controller, which is also crazy. If you're going for that road, the games might not support full features, right?
Right.
Kind of, you know, you cheap out of the proper deal and something might not work, so don't blame it on the developers.
That's right.
But yeah.
Moving on, I want to keep these stories short, actually, around, like, we'll do a five-minute timer, unless it warrants a discussion and we're, you know, not agreeing on things, which often happens. I'd say probably this is the most interesting piece of news that came out this week, and I want you guys to help me decipher what it actually means. Otoy, you know, the guys behind all these light field renderings, they've done a ton of movie VFX work now and a ton in video games. Otoy wants to make light field rendering affordable with a super computing cluster that you get paid to be a part of. Hold your size back. Cryptocurrencies are interesting. I want us to come at this with a kind of overarching viewpoint of how what the hell can we do with cryptocurrencies and how it can apply into rendering pixels, essentially, right? Have you heard about this, Anton? I don't know if you've followed it at all.
I've seen a few mentions for it. I mean, I tend to be Captain Cynic with a bunch of these things.
Okay.
Just because for the simple fact of that A, a lot of these systems tend to be very, like, power inefficient from a, like, they may be neat, but they're not environmentally friendly solutions to whatever their problem space is. And they're all undermined by the fact that internet throughput speed in the United States is terrible.
That's a very good point, actually. Our internet infrastructure is like light fields behind, light years behind other countries, including in Europe and Asia. So it's kind of funny that America
it undermines every single, like, real-time or pseudo-real-time cloud rendering initiative. That, you know, even if we're talking about major city-to-major-city connections, coast-to-coast, they're still atrocious.
If you go for the Lightfield article, as far as I understand, what they aim at is not necessarily real-life rendering, but they want to use the blockchain technology that, you know, a lot of other companies use for different cryptocurrencies, and you basically get a token that you render things with. And what you do is you can basically render light fields, and you do the calculation before you actually run the game. So, you calculate for 2 days, for 3 days in a huge cluster, whatever, the light fields, and then it saves you a lot of performance while you run it live. So it's not necessarily about high-speed internet. What worries me about that is
it more about offline rendering then, in terms of just having access?
It's kind of, yeah, well, it, basically pre-renders the light field of the environment. It's kind of baking light in a certain way, like very broadly speaking, right? But the problem is people need to use it. And with every of those coins, there is like, you know, it needs to be a market. A lot of people need to use it and a lot of people need to pay with it. And those coins are kind of dependent on where you use them, how to use those tokens, and they need a really flourishing infrastructure. So while Bitcoin certainly works and Ethereum too, or Ether, the question is, can they do it? And I mean, it's great that they're trying, you know, to make an article that mentions every bullshit technology out there. But
do you mean there needs to be a certain threshold of users that needs to pass for it to be a not a profitable, but also like a useful network to be a part of?
Yes.
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, I guess anything that is a network based product, like there, you know, you need certain network effects to happen for it to be something that you'd want to be a part of. But I mean, I think the idea of it is really interesting. So, and just to summarize for listeners and viewers here, Otoy has announced a render token. That's the base form of the currency, these render tokens, and they're basically going to be paid to people that have idling GPUs that are going to give their GPUs to the cluster, to the blockchain, so that you can render things for other people. So presumably you can then take those tokens and then cash them out. I mean, right? Like that's or even change them into other cryptocurrencies, which I think would be an easier form of conversion than it would be to do to cash. So it's interesting. I think I'm glad that people are thinking, like, I guess CPU and other forms of processing have already pushed a lot of things up to the cloud, right? Like every single search you do on the internet is nothing is local in that sense. So GPUs are still really local. We're still limited by what GPU people are running. And this could be a form of like moving past that point and thinking about how computers start working together and actually rendering bigger things, especially if the demand for higher quality renders are there, which VR and AR are definitely going to bring. So
at the same time that we're talking here about, we're not talking about a up to the cloud search like a Google search, which is going up to a maximally efficient configured hardware stack. We're talking about like Joe Gamer with their poorly cooled, overclocked GPU.
Bro, I got it.
And raising the ambient temperature in a whole bunch of people's living rooms by a couple degrees because their GPU is doing rendering for Joe Bob's Magical Forest.
You know what? The temperature in the room going higher being a concern is totally real. I've had a smaller room that I lived in, and my computer just heated up the room like no one.
Yeah, I used to heat my room with Bitcoin and my heating system fell out and I used Bitcoins to literally not feel freeze to death in the German winter.
Oh, if the Russians had that, you know, in those Russian summers, all they need to do is just mine some Bitcoins and they'll survive the dead winter.
Exactly.
Beautiful. All right, let's move past this one. We'll keep it up. We'll take a look at it and see what's going on. As time goes
just by. A small notice, when I look down, it's not rude, but when you start videos I need to look down because the internet in Germany is very poor and
so you don't look at it losing connection. Man,
yes.
I won't start videos, don't worry Peter.
Germany.
So last week we talked all about photogrammetry, the week before we were talking about mobile AR. This week Google announced their competitor, I'm doing the fingers, competitor to ARKit called AR Core, which apparently is basically Google Tango's SDK, but with a couple things commented out in terms of the extra bits of hardware that you don't want to have. I don't know. That's probably an oversimplification of how it works. But Google has been doing Mobile Slam for a long time. And finally, they're like, okay, this is when we need to actually push like this ability to everyone that has a single camera on their phone, at least Android, and that's updated to it's probably the latest form of Android, which not every phone has. So it's interesting. I don't know where this is going to go. I swear to God, like I've used a little bit of ARKit. We've talked a little bit about it. We don't know how it's going to be implemented, but we'll see over this year, right?
And there is one point.
He's itching.
Google finally. Yes. One small point, and then you can go on. Like the fact that Google actually partner up with Samsung is totally a good thing because it will launch on their Pixel and on the Samsung devices. That means that they instantly will, you know, also reach millions of users. Like we complained last time, you know, Tengu basically has no user base. Now they're changing it. So it's a very good step. Whether it will be good or not, I don't know. There's a developer should tell us. So Anton, what do you think?
Yeah, let's turn it back to you.
I mean, the thing that, you know, I don't do AR work by and large. I don't do mobile work in general. It's just not my specialization. But as someone who's also a 3D artist, what leapt out at me and excited me about this was the light matching that they're doing to making objects actually feel like they're in the correct luminance and hue range, which has always been a huge turnoff for me for AR. Mm-hmm. And that sort of like, oh, look, that looks like a sticker that you've put over your phone screen. That doesn't even close to look like it's in the environment. And this was the first time something did in something outside of some hyper-specialized tech demo. And so it aesthetically actually seemed interesting. I was like, oh, this is the first time I've looked at AR and gone, I might enjoy making art.
Right, right. Totally. Especially since they have the ambient lighting detection, which is so cool. Like using the camera, they try and estimate where the lighting sources are in the room and light the virtual objects accordingly. Like, that is neat. I don't think ARKit has that yet.
Yes.
That's cool.
Nope.
That is super cool. So we'll see. I mean, let's put it on the back burner for now. Let's see. If you guys have certain things that you're working on, our listeners and viewers, let us know. I mean, we'd love to feature some of the AR kit and AR core things that we've seen. Before we jump into H3, I want to point back to the fact that when we showed this treadmill that Peter over here was on, it kind of went viral on Twitter, and I say viral in terms of VR virality, like there aren't VR tweets don't go that big, but this one did. It has 400 something likes and 100 almost 150 retweets, and it's Peter walking on this cool looking treadmill. Anton, I don't know if you saw this.
Yep.
You have?
Yep. Yeah, and it's treadmills are something I've followed for a while now.
Uh-huh. Are you still interested in them?
Not so much in ones of this size.
I agree.
Bigger ones.
Oh, you want bigger ones? Oh, I like that.
Oh, yes. Most certainly.
Me too.
I can't.
Me too.
We've been talking with some colleagues, soon to be close friends, related to such things. I can't talk about it right now, but
so it's very exciting.
And, but yeah, so it's one of those things that
you're partnering with a hamster ball, right? Like the big bouncy.
Absolutely,
just going to run
like,
in them.
It's like a 14-foot wide hamster ball. We coat the inside of in butter, just because that makes for a more amusing experience for onlookers. So,
oh man, that'll be a fun one to be a part of. Keep your eyes out on Anton's Twitter page to find the hamster wheel that will come out in a few weeks. Don't quote me on that.
And before that, help us with making 1,000 shares, likes, or whatever with this funny video.
You can drop a like if you'd like. I'll just leave it at that. Yeah. I'm not going to ask our viewers to get us to 1 million likes today and we'll give a free giveaway. No, we don't do that here. Not on this podcast. No. All right. So let's move on to the main topic today. Anton Hand.
Yes.
You have made something cool. And I mean, how long have you been working on this? Let's just start there. Like, because I think I've seen some videos coming from you. Like, it's been a few years now.
Well, it's been, this is the first experiments video would have been, I believe, February of 2016. If you go to my channel, it's honestly one of those, it's an emergent property of working on this project. Mm. But if you want to see a VR game being built from its very first test scene, you can see that on my channel. If we go all the way to the bottom here, pretty much.
God,
how many videos do you have?
There we go. Virtual object experiments with Steam VR and Unity. One video up.
This one?
1 year ago. Nope. That's two. To the one up. To the right.
Banana.
One down.
there we go.
What?
And before I started, Anton calls hot dogs, horseshoes, and hand grenades, and meat-themed dicking around with guns simulator. That's the official title and the genre of app that's out there. Let's see how it actually started with the video behind us. I have to mute it.
It's a please. Don't have the sound on. Please don't. My recording quality was terrible. This was done so casually because I seriously, when I recorded this, I thought maybe 50 people would look at it. And so it's I cringe a bit looking back on it. But
little did you know
that's normal.
Little did you know. Oh, look at that. Those are cool models, man. That's really interesting. What?
Oh.
YouTube. What are you doing? Let's go back YouTube. I thought that I had, when I was had a full screen, I saw the Steam VR thing up here and I was trying to move it. I was like, damn it, I can't have that on the stream.
No. Yep, exactly. I didn't know what I was doing when it came to recording a video like this.
You guys should look up Anton Hand is the channel name on YouTube. We'll link it in the show notes for people to find it. Yeah, he really does. You do like once a week, like...
Yep, every Friday at 6 p.m. PST is the devlog. Initially, for the first, like, almost a year of the game, it was weekly updates. And that was originally spawned by the fact that we launched into early access very, very thin in content. And that was in part due to community demand.
Right.
I had originally just been doing a bunch of experiments in a scene, and as it was getting closer to the Vive launch, I started getting barraged by people being like, can I buy what you have? And I'd be like, I have a testing scene with like two guns in it and some spheres. What? And it was enough that we sort of made that game time decision of like, can I death march out something early accessible in 5 more weeks? And so I didn't sleep for those 5 weeks, and we got it on there, but obviously folks were with early access titles, certain gamers are like, nope, not touching it because it's early access. Others are just nervous Fine. That you're just going to like abandon it.
Right.
And so I committed early on to like, no, I'm going to do a weekly update. I'm going to demonstrate to you guys that this is the project matters to me and that it's going to continue to grow. And pretty much all those complaints went away in a couple weeks.
That's awesome.
One question.
Yeah.
We talked with us before the recording that your experience game is very popular. And why do you think it's so popular? Why were the people who wanted even to have those two guns and few bows? What makes it so special?
Do
you have an answer?
I think what jumped out to folks immediately, even back then, is still what draws a ton of people to the project, which is compelling object interactions. You know, everything is physical. In H3, for better or for worse, each round going into and out of firearm is physical. I love this video.
Yeah,
this and is really neat. And so because of that, I've taken a sort of an opposite philosophy to experience creation to what I've seen a lot of other folks do, which is that I tend to have a minimum viable environment for a space and put all of the resources and all of the effort into the actual objects that you're interacting with.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's way less about the skybox than it is about the thing that's in your hand and the thing that you're interacting and shooting with.
But regards to physics and interaction,
check out this reload, guys. Like, yeah, he puts the shells on the bottom. How did that work?
He basically whipped the gun up enough that it moved the shells up and they contacted the chamber, which loads them, and then slammed the gun shut.
so hold up, Peter. So there's a lot of videos on YouTube, like we've been saying, of people just like getting really good at interacting and reloading these weapons. I think that it does lead to people coming back to it, is that there's a certain form of mastery when it comes to H3 VR. You know, you want to master your handling of a gun. You've seen videos of people just being really suave and stuff with weapons. That really does translate into H3 and in terms of how, you know, you do a cool little like reload and you look like a badass.
It's one of the other things that separates in a big way my design philosophy for the game's interactions compared to, I would say, more arcadey shooters, which is that most VR games with guns are concerned with making you feel awesome immediately via the use of it and shaping your interactions, shaping the way the gun moves around. Whereas in H3, it's much more of a neutral physics simulation with lots and lots of giving you as much agency and control over it as possible, But what that means is that everyone feels cumbersome to begin with.
Right.
And mastery that you see in these videos is hard-earned and quite practiced.
Yes. But is your goal to do it super realistic?
Well, I don't think that the term realism means much.
In what way?
I think of it as a term akin to the word God, in that you have if you have a group of people using it, everyone has their own definition of it, and so there's a limit to how meaningful that conversation can be. So in the case of realism, what do we mean with that? Meaning, like, how to put it?
How far do you go? No. I think I totally
not understand. Just how far do you go, but it's what properties of the of the quote physical world are even important to you?
Right.
Which ones do you notice? You know, there's in some really important ways. There's nothing real about this at all because of the core limitations of the technology.
Hello.
I'll ask you this. I mean, with certain, I'm going to stop it for a second. With certain, let's say, sports games, especially even VR sports games, like they recommend. With some of these games that recommend, they're like, forget what you know about the sport and think and try and figure out this physics system more than it is about replicating what, you know, sport that you were playing before. Would you say that's similar in H3, or if you know guns, does that translate into actually using them in H3? Like, does that make sense?
One second. Are you able
to hear Peter?
Sorry,
guys. My internet is poor.
Peter's saying hello, and I don't think he can hear you again. So I think someone needs to click the microphone on their thing. Sorry.
It's all good. This is why we do it live. I don't think I'd see him, but we'll just carry
on. No worries. Cool. But to answer your question, I think folks who do know firearms come into H3, and very frequently they need to know what buttons do. And that's their hump. And then from there, they just run with it. I've seen it a number of times. I've heard it reported a lot. Because a lot of the learning curve in H3 isn't necessarily just a control issue. It's an understanding what the machine is doing. It's understanding how do I take this unloaded and non-readied firearm and a magazine and get it to the readied position and utilize it.
Yeah. So. And I mean, to that point, I think that's what I mean in terms of realism is how much of the knowing things from reality translate into H3. So it is, I mean, based in reality in a way for sure.
Most certainly. It's more to say, I don't necessarily like calling it saying that realism is the ultimate goal, because obviously every single trick that this fellow is doing in here would, if not be impossible, be utterly implausible.
Totally, totally.
Just because of the way that things like friction work and the mass of objects and things like that.
That's fair.
But in terms of the way that they're representing the way the objects function, I try to be as honest to the real-life object as I can.
So talking about realism, I think this is a perfect example of how realistic H3 actually gets. This is what we're looking at.
Frame rate, not. I'm always amazed that people who do this can even get like a 60 FPS recording.
For our podcast listeners, there's a player in H3 that took a gun. I think it started with a pistol and added as many scopes as you can, and even an antler. What do you call it?
Yeah, it's Rudolph's antlers and Rudolph's nose there. That was from our Christmas update. I'm sorry, meat-mas update.
And it's to the point that it's like this huge, 2-foot radius, 2-foot diameter-looking device that has 3 American flags on it. Because, you know, fuck yeah, America, that's why.
America.
So, yeah, I mean, you can go wild with it. You can stay realistic with it. You can play it as a gun simulator. You can play it as a silly shoot 'em up simulator and with not real humans, but you know, you have robots and hot dogs and things that you can shoot at, and barrels, of course. Gotta have a couple barrels. And shoots confetti.
Yes, there's a 12-gauge shell in the game called a Freedom Fetti.
Ooh,
nice.
Freedom Fetti.
Yeah, sorry guys.
Which has the red, white, and blue confetti and a great little derpy honk noise that plays. So,
oh, hello, Peter. Delightful. He's back. It's all good. So yeah, these are really just really cool, fun examples of what people have been doing with VR, with H3 in particular. And because user generated content, I'd say, is still pretty rare with VR users. Like, not that many people record footage of them or streams of them doing things. And so if it's compelling enough for someone to actually get good at it and then want to post a cool video, and then it actually does really well, I'd say there's something to it.
I think it's especially if you want to jump to the Akimbo Reloads video, I think part and parcel with that, on the sort of opposite side of mastery, I think one of the reasons that content with H3 has gone viral is that with physics active objects, the sort of dignity of having that is the ability to fail in all sorts of delightfully kinematic ways at whatever task you're doing.
So let's check this out, guys. Yeah. This is, why don't you tell us what's going on?
Well, we've got like the two coolest handguns imaginable, two Desert Eagle handguns, and it's zero gravity, and he goes to reload them in zero gravity, and friction and inertia have other things to say about this.
So it's pretty funny because the person, tries to reload the first gun, slides the gun through the clip, works fine. The left-handed gun, he tries to slide through, it doesn't work, and then the clip starts floating around in midair, kind of like how it would in zero G, and he's trying to reload the thing with two guns and it's just hilariously not working. I don't know if in audio form that this video makes sense, but you got to see it. He gets excited and shoots himself. That's at almost a million views. Like, that is really neat. I saw this on YouTube. I saw this on a bunch of different gaming posts on Facebook, Twitter, even. So it's hilarious. I saw it actually on Twitter first as someone saying, "I fucking hate VR," and it was this video, and I died laughing because you understand what's going on.
And the first two videos of H3 to like make it to the top of R all on Reddit were both essentially failure videos. One of they had, a popular YouTuber had done a video of H3, and in one case it was just Redditor sort of mimicking that person. Had just basically, it was a sequence of failing at every single firearm. So like, I pick up a handgun and I can't get the mag in, and I try to load shells in a shotgun and I fail at it. And that was incredibly compelling to people because it's indicative. It communicates so well the possibility space of hand-tracked VR. That, like, a platform has to be so advanced in terms of how it is taking your input to have the nuance required for physical comedy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think it was both a funny video, but also I think was really great at communicating to the general gaming audience, this is what hand-tracking means,
dude, because it doesn't make sense otherwise. It has you have no frame of reference of what that means to have controllers and in your hand, that you're physically interacting with these objects, and that there is the chance of success or failure at every single interaction, rather than a press X to reload, right? Like, so yeah, it makes total sense then that failure videos are going to be are interesting, funny, and also relatable enough to people that haven't even played that would make it go viral. So that's really fascinating. I'd love to.
But interaction in VR is a tricky topic. I mean, you have, for example, things like the interaction Uncanny Valley, when you design your VR environment too realistic, you would necessarily lose performance of people and also their ability to believe in it. Now, would you say that the slightly goofy, realistic approach of those handguns and you're floating and trying to do it just diminishes this uncanny value of interaction, so it just prevents it? Or
to that point, it's like when I was talking earlier about how the goal is not realism, even not when we're not in a zero-G video like this, one big divergence from the real world I made week one, and never changed it, although you can change it now as a user, is that I don't use real gravity.
Yeah.
Gravity is much lower, and I've manipulated the air drag on a number of things. And that has to do with the fact that in real life, when you drop an object, it's basically on the ground before you realize you've dropped it. Mm. There is no time left for you to like hesitate and try to recover from that air. Whereas in H3, I think I have gravity set to like 3.5 meters or 4 meters per second acceleration downward, which gives you this ability to, like, if you start to drop something, you can still catch it again and things like that. And A couple people have complained every now and again, but by and large, it tends to be the most pleasurable way. And
interesting. So that recovering from your mistakes, right, that you accounted for that, and that in of itself is a satisfying interaction that you can have. That's really neat. Oh, wow.
It's easier to balance things. It's a way of dealing with some of the limitations of the physics engine, in that small objects tend to fall through things.
Exactly.
When you use realistic gravity, especially, I'm butting up against the limitations of the physics engine everywhere in H3, because cartridges are tiny.
Yes. I mean, you just saw it in the video with the zero G, where when he was trying to stiff the magazine inside the gun, it was kind of going through the material. Like, games are not having, or at least in Unity, I think, it's not that easy to do very realistic physics, or things just cannot go through each other and stuff, or just collide and it's done, and there's force at bending.
I wouldn't want to blame that one on Unity. That's physics, and that's present in a number of engines. So yeah. There's plenty of things that I can blame Unity for. Just get me going. That one is not their fault. That one is just, and it's important when we talk about game physics engines in general. For almost the entire life of them, they've had to do things like, I need to move a 2 meter tall capsule that represents a player across a smooth ground. Or I need to do a vehicle with 4 wheels that sticks to the ground well with a nice motor model. Whereas in this case, it's like that AKM on screen there is probably 3 times the physics complexity of most vehicles in most games. Before we get to the magazines and attachments.
Exactly.
So what goes into that? I mean, hearing you say that, I guess I can't really understand where that complexity comes in. Where do you start, and how have you made these guns more complex?
Basically, the part of it is just having a complex enough physics representation of the shape of the gun, such that when you're hitting other objects at critical contact surfaces, it looks accurate. Most games fudge the physics complexity of their entities dramatically, because it doesn't matter. You won't notice the fact that, like, oh no, when I put that on top of just that side part of the rifle, it didn't collide right. No one's going to notice that until you're actually holding it in your hand and it's covering most of your screen. The second part of it is many of these have pieces that move, and in the case of attachments, that you can essentially build a complex hierarchy onto any firearm you hold. So even if you're not doing something ridiculous like the Rudolph monster there, you know, taking a rifle, putting on several rail adapters, a scope, you know, an aim point, a flashlight, a laser, the physics complexity of that firearm is now about 5 times what it started as. Number of separate entities, trigger volumes, etc. Which is one of the reasons why this is single player, and this will always be single player. It's a tremendous, even before we get to I would say there's two sides of it. One is one person holding 2 firearms, firing them full auto is in H3 is about as much as your CPU can take.
Cause you just, every single bullet that's being
put. Oh yeah. I've got a very complex ballistic simulation in here that is doing ricochet material penetration.
To build it yourself.
Some of it was migrated over from a prior non-VR prototype that I had spent just about 6 months just playing around with making an interesting ballistic system that reacted to materials. In that game, it was actually stemmed from an interest in the way that in all of these shooter games, we never simulate nor narratively reckon with the idea of collateral damage.
No.
When Nathan Drake is running through a town shooting bad guys with an AK-47, those rounds are going somewhere, and they're probably hitting someone's kid inside of the building. So Nathan Drake is a monster, and yet that never gets reflected in any of our games and narratives, in part because we don't try to simulate.
Yes.
The moment a round is no longer hitting an enemy or a cool exploding thing.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter.
So another question. So maybe it's not very clear to anyone in our audience. Like, maybe some people never played around with game engines and colliders. So just I will try to explain it in my words and correct me if I'm wrong. When you have usually your, let's say, Counter-Strike, and you have your weapons, so weapons have some kind of box collider around them. So they don't necessarily have the shape represented. So they look like they are looking like an AK-47, but you just can't, you know, you can't really hit a wall through them, and they don't have all those details and flexibility. Now, as far as I understood you so far, every part of your weapon is represented as a physical object in the game, which is compared to the car. The car is just a box collider, some kind of mesh, and it kind of looks fine, but there is no way you could really make fluids run through it in a physical correct way. Now, if some kind of fluid or some kind of other ways would go through the weapons, it could technically be very realistic, right? And that adds the complexity.
I'm still using a far abstraction compared to the real topology of these. Even our fast computers now would not be able to handle if I... You know, the draw mesh on that G22 there is like 7,000 tries. I would say that its physics representation all put together is like 800 or so. It's every surface that matters. But that's still far beyond the way that tends to ever be represented.
Exactly. Anton, it looks like...
Because it's not needed.
It almost looks like you added a form of like the Rec Room avatars, and you actually now get to kill them and blow them the hell up because of how a non-violent Rec Room is. It's kind of satisfying. That's cool.
These are my Mark II wiener bots. They are, in fact, still made of meat.
That's why it's a meat grinding simulator, or a meat-based... dicking around with guns simulator.
Indeed.
Tell us a little bit about what just came out. You said you've been working on a big update.
Yeah.
And this is the video for this is the update kind of devlog that we're looking at. Yeah.
Yep. This is part of it. Basically, the big thing for this one is that back last Halloween, we released something called Meat Grinder, which was I would call it a genre experiment.
Okay.
A lot of H3's scenes are what I would call genre experiments, which is we have these incredibly realist firearms that diverge in the way that they function from the way that firearms tend to function in games. What are the design ramifications of that when we slam that together with survival horror? What are the design ramifications when we slam that with something more arcadey? And so Meat Grinder is the survival horror version of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the initial version, the initial mode was produced in about, what was that? Maybe 3.5 weeks.
How many people?
Last let's see. Me working constantly. 3 other members of the team working part-time on it. A voice actor. And a few ancillary assets made by other contractors. So,
do you finance your whole living through the game? Is it like the only job you have?
Currently, yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Very impressive. I think you're one of the lucky ones.
Oh, I'm aware of it, and I must admit it makes me feel a little guilty sometimes.
No, don't think of it that way. Think of it, dude. You're working on a passion project that is doing really well, and you're clearly like you gain pleasure from working on this thing, and so is your audience. Like that's a good place to be in VR right now. I don't say a lot of apps aren't
my
there.
Existence.
Do you have yourself a lot of experience with weapons?
I would say that I have a moderate amount as far as the scale operates for Americans.
Okay.
So, ooh, that's a good way to put it.
I was taught to fire a firearm initially by an uncle who hunts, was interested in them as a kid. My brother owns a whole bunch of them still. And it's, I was always, my interest in them when I was young was primarily as an interest in machines and in the way that you have this incredibly wide variety of ways of solving the same simple problem, which is kinetic energy delivery that is man portable, that doesn't break down, and seeing the sort of, especially and then doing even further research for the game, seeing the engineering history, especially in the past like 130 years, has just been such a fascinating research topic for me. In part as well, because by replicating these many of these items in a virtual environment has been a way to learn about them and learn about their relationship to the human body, how they're held, how they line up with the eye when you hold them in front of you. It's in some ways, it's almost like an experiment. Like if they were older, I would call it experimental archaeology.
Okay, would you say that maybe the popularity of your game is due to the fact that a lot of people in America are afraid that their guns are going to be taken away and they want to, you know, keep them at least virtually?
I don't know if you can go that far.
I don't think that fair was...
I'm kidding, by the way. That's a joke.
Okay.
It's really a joke.
I definitely... Well, it's funny, though, because I would definitely say that the popularity of the game in, say... Because people have just said this explicitly to me over and over, of the game in, say, Germany and Sweden, is the, like, absolutely unabiding gun lust that you folks
have. Really?
Yes.
Really?
Because of lack of access compared to America. I mean, if guns are your religion in the U.S., you just move to Texas.
Right.
Texas is a state shaped church to firearms.
I thought Arizona is Texas kind of the state that you want to be in for guns?
I think it's more along the lines that that's where the biggest groups are.
Okay. That's where you can find your homies.
If you wanted that to be a really big social experience. So I think I would say that a majority of the people who actually, no, I don't know if a majority is either gun or non-gun owners. I haven't looked at the data enough. There is a equal mix of them, and I definitely think the game functions as a way to get for a lot of people. Remark, like, this is the closest I'll ever get to this in my life. True. So I have a virtual machine gun now, and this is. For a lot of people, it's definitely in the like, well, that's good enough.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all I needed.
Yeah, I mean, getting a real gun and going to a real shooting range is, that's the whole thing.
It's expensive.
It is.
And that's the thing gun owners say to me all the time is they're like, man, I still go to the range.
Okay.
But now I go to the range like once a month and save myself some money. And the rest of the time, I load up H3 and that would have been like, $600 ammo.
That makes sense. One other critical question to be the devil's advocate. So in Germany, unfortunately, we always have these big debates after a mass shooting. And now those killer games are training our children to, you know, use weapons. While the argument was so far very easy to distract, you know, Counter-Strike is definitely not training you how to repair a weapon. How would you, you know, fight those arguments from those rather crazy politicians? And I'm pretty sure we'll face this debate and we need to defend ourselves as VR people.
I think anyone who has fired a real firearm a significant amount of time, it understands even with the fidelity of all this, just how far it is away from the real thing, from, you know, balance, actual mass, the object, and the fact, the most important part, that when you are firing a real firearm, it's an explosion that's happening.
Yeah, true.
Like a meter away from your face, and there's nothing that the combination of an HMD and your headphones can do to replicate how overwhelming that sensory experience is. So I don't think even if someone's played 1,000 hours at H3 and has never fired a real weapon, if they then picked up like a machine gun or something like that, I don't think they would be sensorially prepared any more than a lay person to deal with how intense
Wait. We will put you on a huge treadmill. We will put some kind of boost bag with tactical feedback, reshaped controllers, a smell device, some kind of vestibular stimulation.
Because you need the smell.
And then I will be there.
You'd be better off just firing a blank gun, like having a person outside the VR environment just firing it a foot from their face.
Yeah. So. Have you been approached by the army? Have you been approached by people who want to use it for training?
We've been approached by a number of people in that sort of context. And it's honestly, games are more fun and
Russian Secret Service?
And don't involve, I mean, defense appropriation contracts. That is a whole different way of life. Yeah. And it's a way of life that I'm not terribly interested in, even before I get into the sort of ethical components of it.
I mean, your experience looks so much fun, you know? So it's just gorgeous and should not be mistaken.
In terms of content that you keep adding to H3, I'm guessing there's always new guns that are being added. I mean, is there any kind of I guess the question I'm trying to reach at is have you been approached by what Smith and Wesson or something, like a real gun manufacturer that is interested in letting people try out guns before they buy them? Like, is that?
No. And importantly, and this is something I was actually approached very early on by a firm that develops laser sights mm-hmm. of various kinds, like red dots where it's mounted to the firearm. You pick it up, you look down it, and where the dot is overlapping the environment is pretty much where the firearm is pointed.
Right.
And I said very early on that I didn't want to do anything. They were interested in the, like, we'd like to advertise our aim points. And I was like, look, all of the critical optical properties that make a red dot on a firearm yeah. work are not represented by a rastertizer in a VR headset.
No.
This is a fixed focal plane in an HMD. No matter how far away something is, my eyes are effectively behaving as though it is all a couple inches away from me, mm-hmm. which means that any sighting mechanism on a firearm, from iron sights to a scope to a red dot, do not behave the same way as they do in real life. And so fundamentally, you cannot represent that product honestly using the technology. And similarly, and I would say this is true of firearms as well. Like they're, yeah, you can definitely jump into H3 and be like, wow, this would be great to have in real life. But that's so much more about its aesthetics and about elements of like areas where you're operating it. We still aren't getting a sense of the feel of it, the weight, the actual recoil impulse. Are edges on it sharper? Are they blunt? Do I like the tactile feeling of metal versus polymer? Like most of the critical decisions that one would make involving, say, a firearms purchase cannot be represented in this technology stack. And to purport to represent them,
yeah, it's kind of misleading.
Advertising them would be lying.
Yeah,
that's totally fair. So, I mean. But
very honest opinion.
Aren't you losing potential revenue and like different routes for H3 to go by being as honest as you are in terms of how where VR is? And are you thinking about where things are going to go in a few years?
I mean, maybe, but at the same time, it's like, why produce advertising that isn't effective, especially when we're talking about an advertising a platform to utilize it that it would be a factor of 100 more expensive or a factor of 1,000 more expensive than existing sorts of platforms. And at the end of the day, because it is fundamentally dishonest, it wouldn't reflect well on myself, Rust, or the brand being represented. So it's fundamentally self-defeating. And I think it needs to be nipped in the bud, and that like there are certain things this medium is capable of informing people of and representing as from an advertising context. And then there's a whole bunch of that that's bullshit. And we need to call it out aggressively.
Oh my God. So much in love is your point.
Or it will damage the medium.
Tell us,
you're so right.
Yeah, if you can go into details to like what some examples going to come to mind in terms of that?
I mean, I haven't really seen much just because it's, well, here's one, here's a funny one of a way in which on the other side, the honesty, quote unquote, mm-hmm. of VR can be problematic to an industry, which is architectural visualization.
Mm-hmm.
The way ArcViz typically works, when you have like a firm coming up with an idea of a building, presenting it to a possible client, this is what we're going to build you for, you know, $50 million. Well, it's the architects are designing it and a construction firm builds it. They will have traditionally presented renders to that client, static images. And the beauty about a render is that it's from the perspective of a camera, and cameras lie. Cameras are a device designed for lying in a really important way, at least in the modern context. And so you can play around with your focal distance, your FOV, how you're framing the shot to tell a certain story about what the eventual experience in that building is going to be. If you build that building as a 3D model and then put you or I standing in that building now with its real dimensions, I can no longer fib to you about what it, say, feels like from the view of a very expensive box seat in a stadium being built. Sort of like, oh, wow, the court looks a lot smaller from up here than I thought it did. And this is something that I experienced in the past, was this very sequence of events playing out was a client perhaps being a little surprised about a design that they thought they had a mental representation of, about what it was going to be from other media forms, and then they stepped into it in VR and went, wait a second.
Is the point that you're trying to make with that example is that VR is a good alternative in that sense, or...
I'm saying it depends on whose perspective. From the potential client's perspective, it's great.
Yes.
From the perspective of an industry that is used to being able to stretch the truth a little bit in terms of selling their idea and vision, it might be a little less optimal. And I'm not trying to like accuse all architects here
of
misrepresenting what they're making. But this is, we all know how business goes when it comes to tens of millions of dollars projects, and everyone has to feel good about it over the course of it. And representing, using VR to provide a more simulatory vision of what's being done, it could be a buzzkill.
But wouldn't that mean that the architects are kind of not... they will not use VR because it kind of shows too much truth, right? So they will...
Or they'll use it in certain contexts and not in others. But I think what I'm saying is that it undermines the argument that I've seen made, which is that something like VR is universally going to be an improvement.
Oh, come on.
Just because pre-visualization of something is not just about accurate.
Exactly.
It's about vision.
But I mean, your game is a very good experience of how much work and how much love can go into those small details. And I'm really fed up with, you know, companies going to marketing agencies, you know, and thinking that those marketing agencies, because they are bullshitting them all the way, can build them the nice VR product, you know? It takes years to build something super optimized for this particular task. This marketing agency, especially here in Germany, there are a lot of them, they build beautiful prototypes for fairs or whatever. But then... the customer doesn't get any other benefits than just the visual and just, you know, making all those small things work. Like in your case, those are the firearms, how they do it. In other cases, it will be how you plan things, how you interact with things, how you model physics. Just so much work. And it can't be just done trickily. And VR is not the solution. VR is an option. And it can do great things, right?
Let's just not forget that VR is a tool rather than a solution.
Software built in VR can be a solution,
right? Like
VR is just a tool chain.
Exactly. And sometimes people get too caught up on a method of a, like, you have a problem and you have the solution, but sometimes people get caught up on the method, and that method is VR. Like that's why it's a tool rather than the end goal itself. You know, you can get to the same resolution in other ways, but like in just a different route. So no, VR is definitely can be great for a lot of things, but I like that point in terms of like the way certain industries are already made right now require a certain stretching of truth or a certain bit of expectations and renders being able to wow people. The point you're trying to make is that VR sometimes can be tricky when trying to push the same things. However, I think a counterpoint to that would be that just make better products or something, or make better runners, right?
And also the counterpoint to how VR represents things is that I think that because VR can represent certain things very, if not realistically, then in incredibly high fidelity in a novel sensory experience, like this incredible canyon that we're sitting in here, people will, and it's why marketing using VR, I hesitate sometimes, is because people will then assume that because those things are real, that everything that they then experience in that same VR experience is equally real, is equally an honest representation. And that's
right. It's hard for people to draw.
And that's not the case.
Draw a line of like what is real. I'll make a point here. Yep. A few minutes ago, something happened on the big screen side where the camera froze. And so I cut the stream because it just wasn't making sense having, us stuck in a weird position. So, but it's okay. We're still recording. Podcast is still going on. We are pretty much running up on our hour now. If there's a couple things that you want to point out to people, actually, let's talk a little bit how people can find you. Anton Hand. What's your Twitter handle?
I'm at Anton Hand on Twitter.
Anton Hand on YouTube. I tagged the hot dogs, the H3 Twitter panel as well in the Twitter podcast stream that you guys can find there. Peter, we'll put this
in the show notes.
We'll have it in the show notes. You guys can find us at ResearchVRcast on Twitter, and you can email us at researchvrcast@gmail.com. Yes. We got a really cool message actually from someone listening to the Subpack episode talking about tinnitus, right? That's how we say it. I can't seem to pronounce
tinnitus.
Tinnitus. See, yeah. Every time I say it, I say it wrong. She was talking, she gave us some really cool, I can't find it. There it is. About how to some interesting theory as to how tinnitus actually can be cured, and rather than a bottom up, you know, something that's wrong with your ears, it's more of a top down approach where it's more mental. Actually, you can kind of, if you can control how you think about tinnitus or how you can respond to it, then you can change how you perceive it. So we'll post the links up that were posted here. Thank you, Petra G, for posting it. Really interesting. And for in terms of show notes, I think we've talked about all we need to talk about us. Thank you, Anton, for showing up, man. Like, this has been really cool.
My pleasure. First podcast in VR.
Yeah, baby.
Hooray!
First of many.
Definitely preferable to like sitting and leaning forward and staring at a Skype window. Exactly.
No, it's awesome.
So I know it's so much more that you have to juggle from a tech perspective. It's deeply appreciated. I'm just blown away at how much more this feels. Yeah. I'm more relaxed doing this because you both feel so much more here.
Right.
Yeah, and real and
sitting
human
here. Yep, it's so much better than like trying to like stare at a tiny video window.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So, and get best thing, Research VR, the first VR, the first podcast that all three, or at least myself, you can host these podcasts not wearing any pants. It's a pretty big plus, and nobody will know. Yeah. So, until I tell them. So thank you, everybody, for joining us. Join us next week for another pantsless episode.
This episode is so going to be NSFE.
You mean NSFW?
Yes. I'm so going to flag it.
And I don't know. I don't think we need to do that. Hopefully, there aren't any weird things sticking out of our bodies. Thank you, Anton, for joining in. It's been great talking to you about realism, the physics of guns, and actually how marketing in VR sometimes can be not truly representative of what people claim for it to be. He knows his stuff about VR. Just follow him. He posts some really cool things on Twitter. Follow us, like we've mentioned. Thank you, everybody, for being here, and catch us next week live again at 10 a.m. on Facebook. We are live streaming on Facebook, on Twitter. We're live streaming on YouTube. We're live streaming, I think those are all three. We might even be on Twitch sometimes. Thank you, everybody, for being here, and we'll see you next week.